Sean, I'm in Seattle and it hasn't stopped raining. Literally, touchdown in Sunday night, was raining. Has not stopped raining since I got here. It's incredible.
Cry me a river, Dan.
I'm here for a reason. As we record this podcast on Wednesday morning, early for me, not as early for you, by the way. We're coming off 2 days of Board of Governors meetings. Gary Bettman spoke Tuesday. There's a lot of news. I think we could just start with the big one that every fan is interested, every team is interested. The salary cap is going to go up. $87.7 million is the projected number for next season. That's a $4.2 million raise on the cap from this season, the largest raise we've seen in the cap since the, you know, season over season from 17-18 to 18-19. That was $4.5 million. Then, of course, COVID hit. But this is a good thing. It's expected that the cap is supposed to go up. Gary Bettman in October said somewhere between 87 and 88 million. So 87.7 is the projected number right now. This is a good thing, but I think we need to also temper it, Sean. Like, I don't think it does. It means like all these guys are going to go out and sign long-term deals for more money now. It's still only $4.2 million more per team for a lot of teams who are up against it, some who might be dealing with some cap overage from bonuses as well that carry over onto their cap for next season.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing is it's not going to be the fireworks that maybe you hoped it would be, but it is going to help some teams get out from under. Right?
Yeah.
Mistakes that they've made or plans. Look, everybody's like, oh, they made a mistake with the cap. A lot of teams didn't make a mistake with the cap. They planned on a year over year add to the cap. And then COVID hit. Nobody planned for COVID and the financial wreckage that would happen from that. So when people look at it and they're like, oh, that team's really tight against the cap, they messed things up. Well, a lot of times things were messed up for them. And this is going to provide an opportunity to get out from under some of that and not be so tight against the cap that you feel like you're choking.
Yeah. And listen, I mean, if it continues to rise like this, if we can continue to have revenues building and the cap continues to go up, we will be approaching a $100 million salary cap come the 2027, 2028. So good thing there, but we'll see where it is. Before we go any further, by the way, Jim Fox, broadcaster for the Los Angeles Kings, he joined us. He will be joining us. The Kings are a hot story in the National Hockey League. 10-0 on the road right now. Tied the NHL record for most consecutive road wins to start a season. So we'll talk all about the Kings with Jim Fox. Our colleague Nick Katsunika caught up with Luke Robitaille here at the Board of Governors meetings. That story's up on NHL.com as well. The Kings are a story. They just came back, you know, Tuesday night from a 3-0 deficit against the Blue Jackets to extend that road trip, that road winning streak, I mean, to 10 games. So Jim Fox is joining us. But a lot of other things first from the Board of Governors. And I mentioned the cap off the top, Sean, because I think that's the thing that every fan and every team and everybody in the league looks at because it's such a cap-driven league. But you want to talk about fireworks. You want to talk about fun. 2024 NHL Draft Sphere, Las Vegas. That's where they're finalizing plans to do the draft. It's a centralized draft, so everybody will be there. It could be the last one we have for a while as it goes to decentralized after that, which really just means that the team brass isn't going to be there as much, and not at least as many of them. But this place, you and I have seen it from the outside. We haven't been inside, but it looks unbelievable. And Steve Mayer was showing me some pictures of what it could look like from the inside. It's insane. And I think there's a real general enthusiasm and excitement. I even felt it from, you know, from Gary Bettman yesterday as he was talking about it, of what this could be. And the NHL will be the first sports entity to have anything happen at that incredible venue that opens September 29th in Las Vegas. So 2024 NHL draft at Sphere in Las Vegas, that's going to be a party.
It's going to be awesome. And it's appropriate, right? Because Vegas has become such a sports town, but who paved the way for it? It was the NHL, right? They were the mm-hmm. first ones in. They made it happen. They took the first gamble, excuse the pun, and showed what a success Vegas could be as a sports town. And in a way, probably led to the development of the Sphere, which is a musical venue for the most part. You know, U2's already done a residency there. I think Fish is playing there, a couple other bands. But they should be the first ones in, right? They should have that headline just because of what they did for the city on a sporting landscape.
You know, and it's funny. It's interesting you brought that up because I was talking yesterday with George McPhee, president of hockey operations at the Golden Knights, for a story that we're going to run later on as we approach the Winter Classic. Obviously, Vegas is going to be in the Winter Classic here in Seattle against the Kraken on January 1st. And we were talking about, you know, the Golden Knights, the impact that they had, the NHL being first. It's, you think about what has happened, right, to Vegas sporting landscape. Since the Vegas Golden Knights came in, right? You've got a football team there now. The Raiders are there now. The Oakland A's are going to move there. They want an NBA team. Sphere opens. Now you're going to get the NHL draft in Las Vegas. F1, let's not forget about it. It's probably the biggest thing, right? F1 is huge. They go there to Las Vegas. The sporting landscape there has changed dramatically. Dramatically. And it starts with the Vegas Golden Knights. And it's really part of the legacy. And McPhee was talking about this. Part of the thing that they're really proud of there in Vegas is when they did it right. They did it sustainably. And they did it for the locals. And the locals have grabbed on to everything else. He made a point of this. He goes, you go to a show in any casino in Las Vegas, 95% of the people who are attending that show are tourists. You go to a Golden Knights game, 95% of the people that are attending the game are locals, and that's what they're generating all that. And it's a localized sporting landscape that's become national. It's really unique, and it is a real big feather in the cap of the National Hockey League and the Golden Knights that it started with them.
Yeah, and what a way, if this is the last time that we do a centralized draft, what a way to send it off, right? You want to talk about a party. Nobody knows how to do it better than Vegas. We've been there year after year in June for awards before they coupled those and started moving them around a little bit. But for a five-year run, we were in June in Vegas every year for awards. They know how to do it right, right? It's an entertainment town. There's so many people there that know how to put on a show. So I can't even imagine what it's going to be like. And, you know, we always say the draft is like the last day of school. This is like the last day of college, right? It's going to be a huge sending off party before the landscape of the draft changes. And I don't think it's in a good or bad way. I don't even mean it that way. It's just in a new way and it'll be different. So I think it's the perfect way to celebrate what Vegas did and to celebrate what the draft has been.
You know, and I think what's going to happen with the draft too, once it goes to what we're calling decentralized, I think it's going to become less of a working environment and more of a party like environment, because you're not going to have the people who are doing the real drafting work, this, you know, that those selections, the pressure on them, you know, the ones holed up with their laptops and phones and all that in the draft floor situation, which I love. Don't get me wrong, as a hockey nerd, a guy who wants everybody around, wants to talk to people, I absolutely love the draft for that reason. But those people are going to be in their home markets when it, you know, after, not this draft coming up in 2024, but after. But the players are still going to be there who are getting drafted. The player families are going to be there. I bet you there's going to be entertainment. It's going to be a different draft, but I think it's going to be an atmosphere that lends itself more to a celebration than it does to a working atmosphere in the draft. And I think that's going to be interesting to see how it goes. But what you're going to get in Las Vegas is you're going to get the combination of both. And that's why it's going to be a special draft.
But there was even more news coming out of the Board of Governors, right? A ton of international news. You were there for that. Let's recap what came out of that.
Gary Bettman called it an appetizer for what he hopes becomes a regular international rotation of best-on-best tournaments, starting with the Olympics in 2026, then a World Cup in 2028, the Olympics in 2030, World Cup in 2032. Every 2 years, you get a best-on-best competition for fans who love international hockey, who've watched the Olympics. It's thrilling to have that opportunity. What this could be in 2025, the geopolitical climate does not allow for a full best-on-best tournament right now, and the NHL wants to do something. And so you'll put four teams, probably the U.S., Canada, Sweden, and Finland, and you put them in a tournament. And I understand that there's probably pushback from people who are like, well, it's not a best-on-best. And In many respects, it's not, because you're leaving out some of the best players in the world. I understand that. But it's a break in the schedule at a time in February where the sport landscape really is turning to hockey. If it's marketed the right way, which I know it will be, and you get great exposure for it, national TV partners, hockey fans are going to love this. Sports fans in general are going to love it, because if you get a Canada-US game, Sweden, Finland, but especially a Canada-US game, Matthews and McDavid and McKinnon, I mean, who's not going to love that? It's going to be great. So that's what they're trying, and he called it an appetizer for what will be hopefully a larger scale international best-on-best schedule for the next, you know, decade or more.
And you know what else you'd get to see if that were to happen? You'd get to see the three Hughes brothers play together.
Together. That's right. I would say that Jack for sure, Quinn for sure. Luke's got some more, something to prove. He's got a little more to prove. You know, there's a lot of good defensemen. He's got something to prove. But he'll probably make it.
You would have that opportunity, which would be even more intense than the opportunity that happened, took place last night. We're recording this on Wednesday. On Tuesday night, the three Hughes brothers played together, but a separate, Jack and Luke on the winning Devils team and Quinn on the Canucks team. And amazingly, Mike Morial, who did a number of stories on this leading up to it, this is the first time they've ever played in an organized hockey game at any level together. Mm-hmm. They're not that far apart in age. For that to happen is unbelievable. And for it to happen at the NHL level is just crazy. They're one of nine families to ever have three brothers play in the same game.
Yeah, and you know what? You're right. I would say if there's a, you know, that 2025 international tournament, if we get to the Olympics in 2026, certainly a World Cup in 2028, as long as everybody's healthy. You're looking at the Hughes brothers all on the same U.S. team, playing for the same, pushing in the same direction. That is going to be fun. I did want to ask, though. I mean, like, John, what do you think about the idea of this 2025 four-team tournament? You know, the concept around it and just the idea of it being, it's, again, I repeat what Bettman said, sort of an appetizer for an international calendar.
I think it's awesome. Like, what else could you want? Like, I understand that clamoring for a full international tournament, but you would have to correct me. I don't think this is a, I think this is an NHL event, right? Not a double IHF event.
This is not a double IHF event. This is an NHL event. And if it happens to where the Olympics happen, it's also a preview for that.
Yeah, but if it's an NHL event and not a double IHF event, you can't have a full slate of teams because you can't man them. There'll be some hard feelings for other players that don't get to be involved in countries. You know, David Pastrnak wouldn't be involved, Malkin, players like that. But I also think that'll feed the hunger to make sure that everything is lined up later. Once you rekindle the excitement over that, I think it just is going to burn into a raging inferno.
Yeah. And listen, I mean, it's the people who, and it's going to get some criticism because you're leaving out so much, but the people who are criticizing, whether it's fans or media or whoever it might be, what are they going to be doing? Well, they're going to be watching it, right? I mean, that's the thing I think we should not forget about. It's going to be entertaining hockey. You're going to have the best players from the U.S., the best from Canada, likely the best from Sweden, the best from Finland playing in a tournament. And it's not for a World Cup. It's not for an Olympic gold, but it's for something. It's for national pride, and you're playing for something. So I think it's a big thing. But we have to, before we get to Jim Fox, broadcaster with the Los Angeles Kings, who joined us, and the Kings are a terrific story going on right now in the NHL. The one thing is the Olympics, 2026. There is, Gary Bettman talked about this. The players want to go. The league knows that. The league is trying to make efforts for them to go, but there's still a lot of hiccups along the way, which is why there's no agreement right now. Yes, there is the issues of ensuring the player contracts, of paying for the player account and player travel and family travel to Milan, paying for the accommodations when they're there. All of that is something that the IOC has taken care of before, and there's negotiating with that now. The other thing that Gary Bettman brought up is the venue for the hockey tournament. It hasn't even begun construction yet. There is no construction on that venue yet. So right now, he said they're looking at the potential of that venue being finished 6 to 8 weeks before the start of the tournament, like the fourth quarter of 2025, which is 6 to 8 weeks before the tournament starts in 26. the Olympics start. That's an issue right now. And that's if they hit their timing right now, but there's no shovels in the ground. So that's a big concern that they have right now. And it's one of those things, and Bettman talked about this, that's completely out of control, out of the NHL's control. It has zero to do with them. That's the IOC, and that is the Olympic Organizing Committee. So when people wonder, why don't we just go to the Olympics? There's a big reason why. There's no building right now to go play in, and National Hockey League players are not going to be the walk in there, you know, when the dust is settling in the building, like you and I did in our rooms when we went to Sochi, and you could smell the sawdust in the rooms, right? They're not going to walk in and go step on the ice and play in high intense, 100% go, 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 100 mile per hour tournament on ice that hasn't been tested yet.
No, of course not. And there's other things, like it's such a black and white issue for people, for fans who are passionate about the game. And sometimes even for players who have blinders and literally are like, this is my last chance to play in an Olympics. Why is it not a slam dunk? But it's a business, right? And mm-hmm. you talked about some of the things, and then there's rights to video and there's rights to everything else. You know, at some point it has to be. It's like a relationship, right? You give, you give, you give, you give, and you're like, hey, when do I get, mm-hmm. right? When are you going to give me something to make this fair, to make it equitable? And that's what you're talking about. And these are all very powerful businessmen, and, you know, everybody's negotiating in their best interests. And I think there's a common ground, and I think it'll be found, because I think it's been too long. But it's not a simple process by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I hope it will be found, because I love the Olympics. I love it when NHL players are in it. It's a great tournament. So we'll see where it goes. But listen, the Los Angeles Kings have been a terrific story for this season. 10-0 on the road right now, tied an NHL record for most consecutive road wins to start a season. Jim Fox, their longtime broadcaster, joined Sean and I. And here's that interview with Jim Fox. Jim, thanks so much for joining us. So big question. Why is this Kings team so good?
Right now, it seems to be balance. It seems to be what so many teams are looking for, and that is, you know what? You just roll the lines over. You hear, how many times do we hear that, right, coaching? I want to roll four lines. Well, Todd McLellan is doing that. I think certainly the acquisition of Pierre Dubois helps down the middle. It takes ice time away from Kopitar and Deneau and even Dubois, but at the same time, I think it puts fresh players into critical moment situations. So you have that balance, you roll the lines, you get everyone contributing. And right now, it seems like any given night, it's a different guy. And that's a plan. The plan is there to roll four lines. Another thing, Dan, is this. The Kings basically, since game two of the season, have had the same six defensemen. So far, touch wood, no injuries back there that would knock anyone out of a game. So when you have that type of balance, and that type of roster solidification, you're winning games.
And when that number one D is Drew Doughty, that certainly doesn't help either. You get to see him every day. It seems like when I see him, he's playing better than he has for several years. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Well, I think the team around him is much better equipped. You know, the Kings have gone through a rebuild. So it's taken 4, maybe 5 years. You can go back to Arvidsson, who's hurt right now. Deneau, you pick up Trevor Moore in a trade, you pick up Brunstrom in the trade, you had Kevin Fiala, you had Gavrikov, you had Dubois. All of a sudden, you keep building, and Drew now has guys around him. I'll be honest with you guys, I think maybe 3-4 years ago, Drew was put into a situation where he knew he was in a rebuild, and he was asked to be a mentor. And I think for the first time in his life, he had to juggle, you know, helping young players and still putting his game on the ice. And I think he struggled there, but it was only one season. The next season he came back. But unfortunately for where we are, we think that, you know, most people don't see us all the time. People remembered the bad season, but don't remember how well he recovered from that season. And now he's in a position where, you know, it's still, unlike most defensemen that get the accolades, Drew thinks defense first. We're talking after a game, he scores in overtime to win a game, that he doesn't think that way. He thinks his number one objective is to stop the other team, and that's what he takes a lot of pride in. And then you add that to the way the team is built right now with so much balance and every line can score. He's on the ice. He's making things happen. Yeah, he's starting to raise some eyebrows again.
You know, Jim, I look at this team, you look at it, they can score, they defend well, they have the puck a lot, they don't give up a lot of shots, they protect the goalie's playing really well, the PK is very good, they're well coached. It reminds me of those Stanley Cup teams. Does it remind you of those Stanley Cup teams too?
Well, you know, Dan, I look at the Cup teams a little bit differently. I think in 2012, just to keep it short, is they didn't beat themselves. In 2014, I think they could go out and beat someone. They can go take the game away from the other team. I think this team right here might be, man, it's a cop-out. I hate when I hear this, but it might be a combo of both because there are the structure you're talking about, there's no question. I mean, everyone throws around the term structure, but the Kings, that's their DNA. It's structure. And Tom McClellan leads that way. But let's give the players the credit. They bought in. Now they've grown together. And now they believe in that structure. You add to that the guys I was talking about earlier, which brings a little bit more skill. So now, yeah, every once in a while, you can score your way around your mistakes. Every once in a while, you shut the other team down. And you keep doing it that way. And something I didn't mention, guys, earlier on, I mean, Cam Talbot coming in is the biggest difference this year. That's the biggest difference because last year, the Kings, 104 points, made the playoffs, structure was there, but the underlying goaltender numbers were not that good at all. This year, they are, and Cam Talbot is the big reason for that. He kind of fits the system. He told us earlier on when he joined the Kings, his style is to let the play come to him, not to overdo things. But within that structure, it fits.
So you're not buying the Cam Talbot as a product of the Kings?
I'm buying that Tom McClellan knew him. I'm buying that Cam understands the experience he brings, the veteran presence he brings. He understands how the team is instructed to play in front of him. And, you know, when you look at the internal numbers, I know you were rattling them off earlier, it's incredible how the Kings really shut down the high danger chances. So if you're a goaltender, you kind of understand that. And maybe the biggest area, penalty kill. Last year, the penalty kill was near the bottom of the league. This year, it's near the top of the league. And when you point to a lot of the numbers are save percentage, high danger area by goaltenders while killing penalties. Last year, down at the bottom. This year, at the top. All of a sudden, you have a strong penalty kill.
Yeah, that's how it works. The other thing with this team is young player evolution, right? The growth of young player. Quinton Byfield, I wrote about him in my mailbag last week. Sean and I talked about him briefly as well. The impact that he's had this season, you know, using his body and using his skill, what's different about him? I mean, is this just now a confident player that's understanding a little bit more about the league? Or is he doing more things? Is he improved in areas that you've seen? What's different about Byfield right now that's allowed him to have not only the production that he's had, but really the impact on other goals that are not scored that he doesn't even get an assist on?
You know, I think it has to start with his skill level, his footwork. For a guy as big as Quinton is, his footwork is exceptional. It's fast. It's quick. It's nimble. He gets around. So what that does, it allows him to get his body in a good position where the defender now all of a sudden has to go through him. 6'5", 225 right now, probably going to be a little bit bigger as he gets more mature and adds just a little bit more weight. So now he's spinning, protecting first, then holding on. Then you add more skill, his hands, as good as his feet. So if there is an opportunity to find an open man, he can do that. He can pass a puck to an area. I think when he came up, in all honesty, he was used to junior, where he could overpower guys. When he came to the NHL, he was not prepared to go into contact or to take contact. And if I can go even deeper, a little bit of sports science, I think they've worked with him on strength, emphasis with his body, but they've also taken that onto the ice with skills coaches and worked on mechanics. What does it take to spin those hips around? What does it take to get your head up and get your hands in a position to make a pass? The other thing he's doing right now, guys, he just realizes right now that the front of the net is where it happens, and he's getting there. And when he gets there, he's a tough guy to handle. But that's kind of understanding, improving his skill, improving his contact positions, but getting to the front of the net.
This team has 4 losses. Right, this year it's the fewest losses in the league, so they don't have to make any statements. But was last night a statement, the win against Columbus?
The way I look at it is it's weird because the Kings played a recent home game against the Washington Capitals and should have won the game. They lost 2-1. So you kind of, you know, you overpower a team. And then, you know, you have a game like Columbus where you're down 3-0. And, you know, you understand whether they read the numbers or not, Columbus's goal differential in the third period is not that good at all.
Mm-hmm.
So early goal in the third period. I mean, that I called it a seed. First of all, it planted a seed of confidence for the Kings, but it also planted a seed of doubt for Columbus. Once they got going, though, it was more of a simple, direct, get the puck to the front of the net. And it was every line bought in. They get it going, shot from the point, get it down low, rebound, tip. That's how they were scoring. So it was a little bit of that situation where I think the other team, you know, really had an off third period. But as you mentioned, four losses on the season, not too bad at all. So the Kings have to get a lot of credit. It was one of those games where, you know, they weren't happy after 40. They had some uncharacteristic mistakes, but that's going to happen over 82. So they didn't get to 2 against Washington. They get to 2 against Columbus. I call it even.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, they're 10-0 on the road this season. They've tied the NHL record for most consecutive road wins to start a season. You're in Montreal right now. They can break that record in Montreal tomorrow night, Thursday night. I want to go, like, we talk about the road, and we talk about a team that's together a lot. This team went to Australia. And it was together in an unfamiliar environment that NHL had never been to before, and they had never been to before. Nick Kotsenika, our colleague at NHL.com, recently talked to Luke Robitaille about this. Luke talked about how the Australia trip really helped. Do you think that has had a role in some of the road success, too? They just kind of know what to do when they're away from home, and they know how to handle themselves, and they did it in an unfamiliar environment.
Yeah, I think generally speaking, Dan, that when you take a look at the NHL and its travel schedule, it's still going to be heavily weighted to the West. So the Kings are used to that anyway. I will say this. Melbourne was phenomenal. They took care of us, the NHL, the way it was organized, the teams, you know, the teams' travel coordinators, those guys, they do a phenomenal job. And everything was so first class all the way. I think that helped everyone. Want to embrace the fact that they're, you know, a 15-hour flight away, they're a day and a half ahead of time. All of that stuff came together because it was clockwork. And I think to a certain extent, you know what, I think the players really appreciated that. But I think that appreciation kind of helped them come together because they weren't worried about stuff. Everything was taken care of them, mm-hmm. for them, so that they didn't have to worry about that. It was interesting. Before our last game against Columbus, you know, I'm trying to break down why the home and road. I mean, at home, one game above, on the road, you know, 9-0, now 10-0. And, you know, yes, they score more on the road and they defend, but why? I looked at the internal numbers, all of the fancy stats, the analytics, and there was no difference whatsoever. Even though the record was different, there was no difference between home and road, you know, inner slot chances, save percentage here, expected, everything was exactly the same.
That's crazy. We talked about it last week, and I'd love your opinion on it. I think part of the reason is, you know, you talked about Kopitar getting less ice time, Dubois getting less ice time, all those guys. But there's nobody that goes as deep down the middle in the league, I don't think. So there's no matchup disadvantage. Todd doesn't have a matchup disadvantage on the road where most teams do, right? You want to get McDavid away from Doughty. Todd doesn't have to do that.
Yeah, on the road, especially, right? When the other team does get that opportunity, you're exactly right. And then you actually add some balance, too. So the coach wants to roll four lines, gets to a situation during most seasons where he realizes he can't roll four lines because he's not getting production down the lineup. Not the case. Blake Lizotte, who normally centers the fourth line, he's been scoring. Carl Grundstrom has 8 goals as a fourth line winger. I mean, that's where you are right now. So you do have that luxury to keep it rolling, to keep it going. And yes, the matchups are not a concern. That's where this group is right now. And then I think the evolution or the reasoning behind going after Dubois, first of all, was Pacific Division, Vegas and Edmonton. Those at the time were the, you know, your guys that you're looking for. So they're strong down the middle. You have to become stronger down the middle. And again, I think we're seeing the Kings being able to put fresh players into situations. when Kopitar doesn't have to drag 22, 23 minutes on his back every night now, he can go out there, maybe in late game, late period, win a faceoff, maybe spend more time and more energy on attack than he has to do defending. You put that all together with that balance you're talking about, especially down the middle, it is a tough matchup.
Last one for me. I mean, we talk about all the depth that they have, the defense, the health, which is obvious. I mean, look at Vegas last year. The health that they had throughout the playoffs, right? You know, people always start to talk after the first quarter of the season as we lead into the holidays, like needs. Is there any right now, as long as health stays where it is, is there any needs? Do you look at this team and say, oh, they could really use that to push them over the top? Is there anything there? Or is this the kind of group that you say, you know what, guys, you go do it yourselves. This is the group I want.
Yeah, you know, maybe a Connor McDavid or something like
that.
Oh,
well, I'll take that. Yeah.
I hate to say it, that I was thinking ahead of myself the other day. I was thinking that exact same thing. I was thinking, okay, now that they're off to such a good start, that puts them into a solid number situation to make the playoffs. What do they do? What do they sprinkle in? And I've yet to come up with the answer right now. I think it would probably be back on the blue line. That's where I think it would be. It's very difficult because, you know, we were talking about Drew Doughty earlier. His partner, Mikey Anderson, is no longer Drew Doughty's partner. He's his own player now. He's established his own identity. So he's grown into that position. Gavrikov comes over, and he's playing with Matt Roy. Very difficult shutdown pair. Very difficult. So Englund, during the regular season, you need that, right? He's been stepping up and scrapping with everyone. He's big. He's strong. He's in there. And Jordan Spence right now, who's on the right side, Dangler, a modern-day defenseman to move it. So they do have that balance even back on the blue line. It's very difficult right now. It's, you know what, as we sit right now, you're in a position where you probably get to, you know, at that trade deadline, you go, guys, and this is in the old Brian Burke, you know what, it's working. We're not going to mess it up. We're going to keep it. This is going okay right now. So we're a long, long way from that. You know, right now, Todd McLellan's talking about he sees a little globetrotter every once in a while creeping into this team, meaning they know their skill level's elevated. So maybe they're trying to be a little fancy at times. That's okay. It's fun to watch. I love it. But he wants that to calm down a little bit. So maybe it's more just tinkering. And you can tell, I think right now that the coaching staff and the players realize that they have a good thing going here, but they're also, it's dangerous to do, but they're building for playoffs. I think that's what they're doing. They're thinking about that. And when things don't go well, they're thinking, what do we have to do to be better to get in the playoffs? And once we're there, be successful. So it's a nice position to be in. It really is. It's nice to have, you know, 2 points again in a game where you're down 3-0. That's nice to build those points right now and put them in the bank.
Well, Jimmy, we'll be watching and we'll be listening, and we'll see where this all ends up, especially on the road. Enjoy Montreal. I know that's going to be difficult to do, but we'll catch up with you a little later.
All right, Sean, Dan, thanks very much for having me. Appreciate it.
It's always great catching up with Jim Fox. He does such a good job with the Kings. And as you mentioned going in, Dan, the Kings are a great story. During the interview, he mentioned Brian Burke and he covered Dustin Brown. Both of them are going in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame tonight. They are joined by Jamie Langenbrunner, who I had the privilege of covering for a good portion of his career in New Jersey, Katie King Crawley, and Brian Murphy, the linesman, only the second linesman to ever go into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. Quite a distinguished class. We have profiles of each one of them on NHL.com. My favorite one was Mike Zeisberger did Brian Burke's, and his lead was Lou Lamoriello saying, if you want to know about Brian Burke, go ask him. And to me, that is the perfect summation of who Brian Burke is in a good way. I'm not making fun of Brian at all. He does like to talk, and he's a good salesman, and he's doing it with the PHWL. But, you know, he's built 3, 4, 5 teams. He's been an agent. He's done all those other things. So it's always a great night. USA Hockey does a fantastic job with it. They do that in the Lester Patrick. It's Joe Bertagner from Hockey East. He created Hockey East with Lou Lamoriello. So a great night in Boston. Emily will be there. We have profiles of all the inductees on NHL.com. If you're interested in history at all, there's some really great people and you should read up on them.
It's a great night. It's a Hall of Fame night. It's congratulations to everyone there getting into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame as they do tonight, Wednesday night in Boston. You're right. Jim Fox was great to join him. Listen, there's another great story going on, Sean, in the National Hockey League right now. And we talk so much about the Arizona Coyotes for where they play, right? For where they play. What ice surface are they going to be playing on? And it was a topic of conversation here at the Board of Governors meetings too. They've, by the way, they're hoping to secure a location in the Phoenix area. There's a time limit here. There's a lot there. You can read about it on NHL.com, but there's a lot of talk all the time about where they play, about how they're playing. And they're playing great. And Connor Ingram, their goaltender, might be the best story, individual story going in the National Hockey League right now. There's competition for that, but he is a terrific story right now. If you think back 2 years ago, Connor Ingram entered the NHL, NHLPA program, right? He went for 40 days to a mental health treatment center for OCD. He has come out of that and he's regained his NHL career. He's regained his life, really. And now he's thriving in a small sample size as it is. But this goaltender is 11-3 with a 2.23 goals against average and a .930 save percentage this season. In the last five games, 5-0, 0.99 goals against average, .968 save percentage. The Coyotes obviously have won all five games because he's 5-0 and he's played in all of them. And it is against the last five teams to win the Stanley Cup. The Capitals, the Blues, the Avalanche, the Lightning, the Golden Knights. It's a remarkable run that this team is on. They're good, Sean. And nobody's talking about them for what they do on the ice. But this team has come a long way. They're good. And Connor Ingram has been a terrific story. You know, by the way, Clayton Keller, you can catch him on The Chirp with Darren Millard as well. He was Darren's guest this week. And there's a lot to talk about there with the Coyotes and the season they're having right now.
Connor has been a great story. Such a journeyman career, such difficulty getting into the NHL. And look, I think they went in and they thought he would be the backup this year. And, you know, he's stolen the job and he's been fantastic at it. But they've had so many good players, right? Like mm-hmm. so many guys that have kind of stepped up and done things you don't expect. Look, you look at a player like Sean Durzi. He's been unbelievable. Coming from the Kings, who we just talked about, and just playing lights out, like kind of a sneaky, you know, let's put him in the back end of the Norris conversation almost. And then, you know, you look at the points, it's Clayton Keller, but then there's a ton of guys with 15 or more points where you're kind of looking and you're saying, really? Those guys, right? It's Michelli who had some nod for rookie of the year, so you kind of expect that. But Schmaltz, Bustad, Carcone, Kraus, Kerfoot, like these are all guys that I don't know that the average fan knows, right? And they're contributing every night. So it's a great story. And, you know, we talked about all these teams that were going to make the jump. And I don't know that Arizona was one of them. And they clearly are.
Yeah. Michael Carcone, you mentioned him. He's going to win the Cy Young right now. 12 goals, 3 assists. Like it's pretty remarkable. These guys got 12 goals, you know. But they're a team that's really – Clayton Keller's a star-type player. He is. And again, he joined the Chirp with Darren Millard, so you can listen to that as well. He's a star-type player, but they're a team that's a sum of their parts right now. They're playing well. There was optimism about where this team could be. I remember I talked to Bill Armstrong, their general manager, earlier in the season when they came through New York. We sat down. There was optimism about what kind of team this could be and if they would be able to make some noise. And they're doing that right now. They are not going to get the benefit of the doubt, right? I mean, we're not going to sit here and assume that the Coyotes are going to be in the mix come March, right? We don't know because they have a lot to prove. But the way they're playing, the style with which they are playing, how they're defending, their ability to score, get multiple options, it's like Kings light, if you will, right? I mean, we talked to Jim Fox about all these things that the Kings are doing well, and they have veteran guys, and they've proven guys, and they've done it. The Coyotes are playing a similar brand, not as consistent, and they're hot now, but they're not as consistent, obviously, as the Kings have been, but they play a similar way. So it's sort of like Kings light, and they've been a real positive, and I touched on this in my mailbag this week, somebody asked me, like, the most pleasant surprise, the most, you know, disappointing surprise, if you will. And they're my most pleasant surprise, the way that they've done it this season, how they've done it. And now Ingram stepping up the way he has too.
Look, I mean, we're 25 games into the season, so it's more than a small sample size. But one of the things that I look at, like, everybody loves the Colorado Avalanche, maybe nobody more than me. You talked about it, Stanley Cup champion 2 years ago. I just keep thinking that they're going to get on a run. And then, you know, everybody loves the Dallas Stars also in that division. Colorado's plus 17 goal differential. Dallas is plus 13. You know what Arizona is? Plus 14.
Yeah.
They're right there. Like, they're playing the same style of hockey that these behemoths that we celebrate all the time are playing and not getting the same amount of credit for it. And I understand you're some of your reputation, right? And it takes a long time to change your reputation. So Arizona has their work cut out for them, but they're playing and succeeding in the same way some of the teams that we really celebrate and respect are playing.
Yeah, they just have to, like I said, they don't get the benefit of the doubt of, so they have to continue it. You know, we need to continue to see more. We expect the Avalanche, right? We expect the Kings now. We don't expect the Coyotes. And that's what they have to prove. They have this season to prove that. So, like I said, though, the question that I got in my mailbag was, you know, it was, what is the, you know, the most pleasant surprise? And which team has been the most disappointing head scratcher? There's really two in terms of head scratchers. I'll touch on the first one first. It's the Buffalo Sabres for me. They just lost their fourth in a row. They go to New York. I watch them at Madison Square Garden. They play a 60-minute game, a very strong 60-minute game. They pull away at the end. They win 5-1 against the New York Rangers, who, you know, 18 wins, best points percentage in the league, right, had been rolling along. The Sabres, they don't win it with star power in that game. They don't win it. The goalie UPL was good in that game, but they didn't goalie their way to a win either. It was a full team effort, 60 minutes, repeatable, right? It's a repeatable game because you're not relying on one guy to just jump out and be that way, right? They've lost four in a row since. And that's a problem. And in these four games, I mean, they're losing 6-4, 6-2. 5-3, like they're a little lost, and I'm surprised by this. I picked them to make the playoffs. The way they played in the second half of last season, they missed by 1 point. They were really good. They were building, and you get a little success, but it's not really success because they didn't make the playoffs. And now look at them; they can't handle it. And now they're a team that people are on the lookout for all of a sudden, and they're getting their doors blown off on some nights, and they're not consistent. None of it, what should be repeatable, is not repeatable for them. It's problematic. It's a team to me that really needs a jolt. They need something. They need a jolt. They need a change.
Yeah, well, and maybe they get it with Tage Thompson coming back. I mean, we need to remember that. Like, he's their best goal scorer, and he's been out. But it's those guys, right, that we all thought were going to take a huge step that haven't, right? Dahlin hasn't been as good, I don't think. Tage Thompson's been hurt. Other guys haven't taken a step forward. We all thought Devin Levy was going to be rookie of the year. You know, it was going to be that next young goalie. Where is he now? He's in the AHL, right? Goaltending's hard in the NHL. You don't do it as a young man. It's really difficult, and we keep forgetting that, all of us. Mm-hmm. We're all guilty of it. We get wrapped up in, oh, my God, what a star he was in college, what a star he was in junior. Carter Hart was the best thing ever coming out of junior. He's a good goalie for the Philadelphia Flyers. He has not yet been what was projected for him to be, and I don't even think that's on him. I think that's on us, right? And not understanding how difficult a position goaltending is, especially in the NHL, and we need to expect that. But I don't think I expected Devin Levy to be in Rochester, right? I think that's a microcosm of where their season is.
Well, also, you have three goaltenders if you're Buffalo, and one of them can get sent to Rochester without having to clear waivers.
They wanted to keep him. He was the great hope.
Yeah.
He was going to be the savior. They didn't want to send him down. Nobody wanted to send him to Rochester. He didn't want to go down. That's not what happened. He played his way into the AHL.
And listen, the Buffalo Sabres are playing their way right out of a playoff race. Like, they're not anywhere close to being even in consideration right now, just simply because of the four games in a row they've lost. They keep losing. They're not figuring things out. Can they turn it around? I mean, maybe, but we've seen it, like, kind of remind, like, we've seen this from the Buffalo Sabres before, right? We've seen them go in these massive losing streaks and it ruins their season. And they've done it several years in a row now. Are they in one now too? Is this happening again?
I mean, it could be. Like, again, you look at their goal differential and it's minus 16. The Canadians are minus 17, right? So, and then you look, you know, everybody's like, oh, there were the three teams, right? And Detroit's in second. They were one of the teams we thought was going to make a jump. They're in second in the Atlantic, you know, ahead of Florida, ahead of Toronto. And then it's Buffalo in seventh and Ottawa in eighth, right? And everybody's ready to write off Ottawa. Two things about Ottawa. They've only played 20 games. The Tampa Bay Lightning have played 26. The Buffalo Sabres have played 26. So they've played an inordinately low amount of games. I think it's the lowest in the league. They're legit 500. They're 10-10. They beat the Rangers last night, right? They're plus five in goal differential. I think there's something in Ottawa. They're just behind the eight ball because they haven't played games, right? And they need to make up those games. And you talk about games in hand. They're only games in hand if you win them. If you lose them, they're not. But I look at them, and then I look at, like, the Toronto Maple Leafs, who we all love. Like, how many games have the Toronto Maple Leafs won?
Oh,
in regulation?
Five? I think it's five wins in regulation, yeah. Something along those lines.
Five regulation wins. Yeah. Like, what is that? There's room for the Ottawa Senators, and I know you know, at the Board of Governors meeting, you talked to their new owner, you know, and he expressed some optimism and some patience, and I understand that it's very hard for Ottawa Senator fans to be patient, but I watched that Ranger game last night, you know, and you saw what Ottawa can be, right? Against a really, really good Ranger team, maybe the best team in the league behind the Kings, right? At least in our opinion, in my opinion, in your opinion. So there's a blueprint of what they can be, but like Buffalo, they haven't been consistent about it.
Well, and I think that's why Michael Andlauer, or their owner, came out on Monday at the Board of Governors meeting and talked about not making hasty decisions, not making a decision because the fans in Section 300 or whatever are calling for DJ Smith to be fired, right? I mean, it's been a struggle. There's been a lot that's gone on in Ottawa this season, and in only a 20-game schedule so far. You've got the Shane Pinto, this is, you know, situation, the 41-game suspension. He didn't even sign, but 41-game suspension for his involvement in sports wagering. You've got the Pierre Dorion situation. A lot's gone on in Ottawa. They don't want to make more changes there. They need to let this team breathe and play. And Brady Tkachuk, I think, talked about this recently, where he said, too many days off between games, they think too much. They're going to have a lot of games coming at them. If they've only played 20, a lot are coming at them. The Ottawa Senators could be a real dangerous team, especially if they play the way they played against the Rangers.
And we mentioned Detroit, and I think it's really important as we get towards the end of this episode, right? Detroit's playing unbelievably well. We've talked a lot about it, but they've made a huge gamble in signing Patrick Kane, hoping they catch him on the upside of what his recovery will be from hip resurfacing surgery. He's getting ready to make his debut, and that's going to be awesome. Like, I can't wait to see what Patrick Kane is. And look, don't take the first game and be like, oh, that's what Patrick Kane is. It's his first game coming off of major surgery, but it'll be nice to see him out there and to see what he can do on what's a really good first line in Detroit right now.
Yeah, I thought he might play in Buffalo Tuesday night. Obviously, he didn't. I thought when last week we were recording, we were talking about Patrick Kane, that we would have an ability to talk about Patrick Kane playing in a game the next time we record. That's today. We don't. I think we will next week, Sean. I think that's going to happen, that we'll be able to see what Patrick Kane is all about in a game. But we have to wait, really, for many, many games to see what he really is going to be this season for the Detroit Red Wings, because he's coming back from this surgery. It's going to be hard, but everybody's going to overreact to his first game. You know that's going to happen.
Yeah, and I guess we know who's calling the shots, right? It's not Patrick Kane, because if it was, he would have played in his hometown of Buffalo. It would have been the Hollywood moment, right? But let's, you know, better safe than sorry. There's a good chance he could play tomorrow night at home, which is where it should be, right, when you think about it. What does the player want? What does the franchise want? If you're attaching your wagon to this star, or to see what he can do. Don't the home fans deserve to see him first? I think that's definitely the case. Plus another 2 days couldn't hurt at all. You know, so we'll have Tracy Myers out there to in case he plays on Thursday. And if he does, it's certainly much watch TV.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm looking out the window again here in Seattle. I think it's still raining. I'm going to head over to the Kraken practice. They're struggling right now. I'm going to see my first game at Climate Pledge Arena Thursday night. It'll be a lot of fun. This was a lot of fun. We thank Jim Fox for joining us. We'll talk next week. Enjoy the hockey.